views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you tune in to the vibrant, powerful person you were always meant to be so that you can create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. Today, my guest is Stella Orange, who was on my show last year as part of a trio called Orange, Liston, and Dew. We aired that interview as a vibrant replay just recently, and now I'm excited to have all three of these truly vibrant and powerful women join me on their own to share some of what life has taught them when it comes to being vibrant and powerful. So let me tell you a bit about Stella. Before starting her direct response copywriting business in 2009, Stella grew up in the US, France, and Japan, and was a teacher, a long-distance cycling guide, arts fundraiser, and wrote stage plays for theater. What a beautifully varied background you have, Stella. Amazing. This is what makes her great at writing advertising and sales copy in a rare and compelling way. Stella has written multiple email marketing campaigns that resulted in more than $100,000 in sales and now writes websites and marketing copy for Las Peregrinas and leads Writing Your Way Home, a guided excursion into your inner world. Today, Stella is here to talk with us about the magic that unfolds when you pick up a pen and a notebook to begin each day. Stella, welcome back to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show.
It is a pleasure to be here, Debbie. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so happy to have you back. So let's start by having you tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are as a woman. Like, what are a few things about you that you feel would be most relevant or interesting to our Vibrant Powerful Moms audience?
Well, let's start with, I was once told at an event that I was hosting for my business, I had a person stand up in a room full of 35 people where I was hosting an event and compliment me on modeling imperfection.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yes.
I have been told that before as well. For allowing us to make mistakes.
Yes. And so, you know, at first I was like, what? Like, you're, you know, don't throw shade here in my own event, in my own house. But it was not the first time that I had heard that. And I actually received it as a compliment because I realized, oh, I've actually worked really hard at being a recovering perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And like one of my strategies for doing that is just telling myself like a mantra, I don't have to do it perfectly. Just do it.
Yes.
And so what that ends up being, what that ends up making me for other people is modeling imperfection. Like I don't do things perfectly. I do things that delight me and that are inspired and I do interesting things, but there's always things I want to improve on once I finish it. So to me, the thing is for doing it. Yeah, exactly.
For all of us. I have never read something or listened to something and thought, oh, I could have said that differently.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And of course, it's after you do something like that, that then the absolute perfect way to say it comes.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that would have been so good. That was so eloquent.
Yeah. Well, and I always think of, do you consider yourself a writer as well, Debbie?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. For me, that I attach that characteristic as being always the writer for me. When I do something and I'm like, oh, like, you know, 2 hours later or 2 days later or 2 months later, you're like, oh, this is what I really meant to write. Yes. Like we're always editing. And that's part of my practice, both, you know, professionally, whether I'm writing marketing copy or I'm helping people develop their own writing practice and as, you know, a creative practice in their own lives. It's like, no, listen, like life is revisions and editing and not getting it right out of the first go. And for me, what I've learned, and I don't think everyone is like this. I think the educator in me will speak to that. But for me, I actually learn by making mistakes and by taking action. I think that's true for a lot of us, but sometimes people really need to plan things out ahead of time. Like that's how their brains work. Like I don't have a brain like that. My body is really connected to how I learn. Yes. And so I actually need to like unhook that part of my brain that says mistakes are wrong, or if you make a mistake, you're bad, or you're somehow less than.
Yes.
And that was true for me as a classroom teacher. And it's certainly true for me as an adult who's kind of, you know, raising herself in the world as a woman. It's like, no, don't worry, honey, you made a mistake. Like, yeah, that sausage was too salty, but next time you make that recipe, it's going to be better because you'll know that that's too much salt. Like,
yes.
I've got to always stay in that frame of mind. Otherwise I get locked down.
Well, and I think that sometimes too, it's not just a mistake. I mean, the sausage thing could definitely go down as a mistake, but there's lots of things that where you say we're editing, where really what we're doing is we're going deeper. We're uncovering those deeper layers and going, oh, now that makes just a little bit more sense. This is what I meant to say, but I didn't know that then.
Yes.
I couldn't have done it.
Yes. Well, even the frame of a mistake, right? Like I first learned that my first year as a classroom teacher. I was a public school teacher in an alternative school in Seattle. And this was, I don't even know, I'm not good with time, but it was years ago.
Okay.
And I found the quote because I was trying to convey this to my students. Like I ran a one-room schoolhouse for grades 8 through 12. And these were kids that didn't do well in traditional schooling. And I was looking to impart this idea to them. And I found this quote attributed to the jazz musician Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to totally mess it up, but basically it was the effect is the music is in the mistakes. There are no mistakes. And I was like, holy smokes, that's it. Like,
yeah.
Like what if we just give ourselves the grace of not even believing that mistakes exist? And as a, you know, teacher and an educator for young people, that was something that like made me nuts about the school system is I was like, wait, like, why are we taking off points for mistakes?
Right.
Like, shouldn't we instead be teaching kids how to learn and figure out and backtrack? Like, well, why did I not get the quote unquote sought after answer in a math problem, like the correct answer? And what was it about my process that led to the result I didn't want?
Yes.
And so, it's great to be an adult where we're not in that system anymore, where we can actually kind of relearn our relationship to screwing up or things being messy or not having them as precisely or articulately as we want them just yet.
But you know, that's a really interesting comment. And you know what? I just want to say to the listeners, this is very powerful leading us into what we want to talk about. So this isn't just us, you know, going way off on a tangent. This is really important stuff. But don't you think that when we take stuff and put it into like right and wrong into these categories, like in the school system, that we're stopping people from really taking risks and really wanting to try to learn something new, which is where creativity really comes in. And some of the best answers come from that situation that you would have said was a mistake.
Amen.
Nice. Yeah.
Amen. Yeah.
Nice. Nice, nice, nice. So I just know this is all going to tie in to Writing Your Way Home. So let's just take a step back and tell me about Writing Your Way Home. How did it come about?
Yep. So as you mentioned, I started a writing business in 2009. And I primarily started by writing marketing and advertising materials for other businesses. So people, different businesses across the country and around the world would hire me to write the copy, the words for their websites, mm-hmm. or words on a postcard. And eventually I got really highly trained at these specialized marketing campaigns where you're selling a product or an online course through a series of sales emails or an online presentation. And one of those, like,
I don't know, it's a big long, we call them in the industry like a sales letter. We're taking people through a sales process.
Right.
And I did not know, I'm trained as a high school teacher. I have a degree in political science in undergrad and international studies. And I've done, as you read in my bio, I've done a lot of different things in my days. And so I'm actually self-taught. So I started a marketing writing company because I knew I was a good writer and I knew that I could figure everything else out. Like I just had that trust in myself. Those were the two skills. Didn't know if it was going to work or not, but I was like, well, you know, we'll give it 6 months. And if I can't, you know, pay the bills, then maybe I'll go look for a job.
Right.
And so that's initially what my business was about. And then I developed my skills and I got better and better at what I was doing. And I invested in myself and got a bunch of training and raised my prices and, you know, started that process. And then I started having people say, well, I can't really afford to hire you to write my website, but can you teach me how to write my own website for my company?
Right.
And I said, sure. And so at first I started teaching like, here's how you write a headline. Here's how you describe the service or product that you've got. Here's how you invite people to, you know, buy or get on the phone and talk with you about working together. But what I noticed was that didn't actually cause people to have like what I would consider an effective website.
No.
I was like, wait, I can teach all these different skills, which are absolutely skills that I had to learn and, you know, master as a professional writer, as a writer of marketing and sales copy. But I was like, there's something else that I must know how to do that these folks, my students, haven't figured out yet.
Right.
And this was years, Debbie. Like I kept, and I did well, like, and my clients did well, like that took my workshops and classes. Like they were really happy because even teaching skills, like they were learning skills and they felt like that was better than they could have done on their own. But I was like, no, there's still some other factor. And after years of teaching classes and workshops and hosting, you know, live events where people could come and learn with me, I was like, what is it? What is it? And I came up with two things that made the difference for me. And one, I was like, you know what I don't talk about at all is like I'm constantly having conversations with my friends and colleagues to like bounce my ideas off of them. And so I cook up all these ideas on my own and then I'll run them past someone whose opinion I trust. I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? And that, you know, one of these things would happen. They'd be like, yes, that totally makes sense. That resonates. Or they'd be like, I don't get it. Right.
Right.
Or that's not what it is for me, but I'd get that feedback, which was basically sometimes I made a mistake. My idea could have been great or it could have been kind of like a clunker, but I got the feedback from someone that I trusted before I actually tested it out in the marketplace. So that actually was a smart technique to save myself a lot of blood, sweat, tears, money, and time to kind of beta test my idea and see if it had legs or not. So that was one strategy that I noticed that I was using that I actually had never taught to my students before. Mm-hmm. And the second thing was this thing that I now do on its own, which is writing your way home, which is actually just a personal writing practice, like a journaling practice, where you're writing to yourself about whatever you want to have a conversation with yourself about. And what I found was, and it took, I mean, I'm not always hip to this stuff, right? Like it took me years to realize, oh, I had been writing to myself in a journal since I was like 15 or 16 years old.
Right.
And so I started that. And then I started writing letters to, you know, I moved to the other side of the world. Like when I was, I think 13 or 14, my family moved from the Midwest in the US to Europe. And then I started writing letters to a friend, like one letter a week. And I'm convinced that it was that writing practice, like learning how to write letters to express myself to a dear friend and then getting her letters in return and then writing in a journal to myself. And I was like, oh, is it possible that I've developed some sort of magic skill because I just show up and do a writing practice and have found a spot within myself that I can, when I need to write, I found the place that words come from inside me. And so I don't hold a white knuckle death grip anymore, because I know that I know how to write and eventually I'll figure it out in my writing.
Nice. You know, that is beautiful. And actually, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was about a tip for someone who's feeling a little bit stuck. And you might have other ones and I'd love for you to share them, but let's just highlight that one first. Mm-hmm. If you pretend you're writing a letter to a friend, what would you write? Because then we get out of our own way and we start thinking about, all right, what should I tell them about? And how do I make that conversation kind of fun?
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't want to write to a friend and say, you know, I ate chicken for dinner and the kids are, you know, kids are driving me crazy. You would get into the story about why you ate that chicken for dinner, what, you know, what was fun about it, what was funny about it, what was remarkable about it. And you would tell them what's going on with the kids. It's driving you crazy. You'd make it a conversation.
Absolutely. And start with the icky stuff. I think that's the thing. So that's absolutely a great tip. And in the workshop, the Writing Your Way workshop, I've had people who use this technique of writing a letter. And I often encourage folks, like, make up who you're talking to. Pick someone who's always on your side. And so my mom did the workshop with me a couple years back, and she wrote a letter to her 68-year-old body. Nice. And at first she was going to like grump and complain at it. And she said, you know what though? Once I started writing to her, it became a love letter. And it was like this remembering of all the adventures we've had through the decades. And my mom's not a writer. Like if you were like, hey, are you a writer? Is that how you think of yourself? Like I asked you, Debbie, my mom would be like, no, not my thing. I had a woman who wrote a letter to her long deceased grandmother who'd been dead maybe like 20 years. And she was feeling stuck in her life. And so she wrote a letter to her grandmother because grandmother was always on her side. And she said, here's where I'm feeling like I could use some movement, and just laid it out all on the table. Nice. And so it's a really powerful tool to just imagine who would you, and I've had people do it with celebrities or like famous people that they've never met before. You can make that part of your practice. And for me, it actually came about for me personally, kind of organically, when I was in my, I would say late 20s, early 30s, I was kind of in that, who am I? What am I going to be when I grow up? And I've since learned you continue to have those sorts of questions. Doesn't really matter how old you are.
Very true. It's very true. It never changes.
And you'll change. You'll solve for it for a little while. And then you pick your head up again 10 years later. You're like, okay, who am I now?
Yeah.
But I like invented this character of my 86-year-old self. And no one told me to do it. I have no idea how it came to pass, but I just was like, oh, I'm just going to start writing a dialogue on the page, but where on the left side of my page, I'll write me as I am now. And on the right-hand side of the page, I'll just imagine what my 86-year-old self would say. And I call her 86 because that's her name, apparently.
Yeah.
And so that when I'm feeling kind of at a loss for what to do next, or I'm really feeling strong emotions and I can't seem to find anyone in like a partner or a loved one to listen, or I don't really want to share it with another human yet, but I know I got to get it off my chest. Mm-hmm. I'll go to the page and I'll say, hey, 86, can we talk? And nice. That's worked really well.
Yeah. You know, I like to do something similar, but as much as I do consider myself a writer, I've written a couple books and I just do a lot of writing, but I don't always love writing. In fact, there's some days where I just can't make myself write something, but I can always make myself talk about something because I'm an auditory. So I will often talk to myself and do the same thing you're talking about, but it'll be a conversation. Mm. Everything will start flowing and then I'll pick up the pen. And
cool.
Sit down and start writing about it. Yeah.
I love that. I've never heard someone articulate it like that before, Debbie. I know a lot of people that move to get, like, if I feel plugged up in my writing and I can't sit still anymore, I'll go for a bike ride or a walk or a run or.
Absolutely.
But I love that idea of just getting talking. That makes so much sense.
You know, interestingly, most of my talks, because I lived out in the country when I was in Canada, and most of my talks, I'd go for a walk and have the conversation while I was walking out in nature. I'm not sure if it was the movement, if it was being in nature, a little bit of everything.
All of the above. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I would actually have the whole conversation. Even if I was going to be interviewed on somebody's show, I would pretend to have the conversation with them while I'm out walking just to get things flowing and feeling and thinking about, oh, no, that wouldn't be a good thing to say. Like that leads me into a whole other rabbit hole that I don't want to go in, you know. And yeah, I found it to be a really great way to grow as a person and to get an idea of what was really going on for me.
Amen.
Nice. Nice. So what other tools could we give people that, okay, so you're drawing a blank. Like I know people who will sit down, they feel like, all right, I understand journaling's important. I'm not really crazy about writing. And I sit down to write and I find myself writing about the mundane rather than,
join the club.
Yeah. Well, I know we all do it. So what kind of tools or tricks can you give?
I call it writing to empty. So this still happens to me a lot. Like I write a lot about grocery lists and things I want to fix in my 117-year-old house. So like that happens. And I have a judgy voice that comes and is like, why are you doing this? So one tool is write down what the judgy voice, I call it your gremlin voice, write down what that voice is saying to you, like put that in the margin.
Okay.
And then you can be like, you can start a conversation with that voice. You can be like, who are you? What do you, you need some attention? Can I help you over there? Like, what are you really looking for?
Right.
And you can begin a dialogue with that voice. And often those folks are messengers that are trying to protect you or give you some message. And we keep kind of giving them the dust off so they can't give us the gift they want to give us.
Yes.
So if you begin a conversation with that entity, you can get, usually there's something good there for you that's actually quite helpful or interesting or nifty.
Nice. And sometimes their message really is, you are boring me.
Yeah.
Or why are you writing about this again?
Or you are bored. Like that for me, and I'll feel that kind of rising up within me. And sometimes I don't want to talk to the voice. Sometimes I'm like, okay, what am I avoiding?
Yeah.
What's really going on? Mm-hmm. What would I like to be writing about? And just kind of getting in a generative space and not hating on yourself or judging yourself, but getting curious. Like, okay, so you're bored about talking about eating more vegetables. Right. What would you like to talk about? And oftentimes what I'm waiting for is someone else to ask me that question so that we can have a really good conversation. And often other people aren't there thinking, oh, what can I ask Stella so that she feels like vibrant and powerful? And so I've got to, like, for me, the writing your way home practice is really, okay, what question could I ask myself to kind of get things going in the right direction? So,
Yeah, nice. I've also used the tool of just thinking that, okay, what if somebody picked up my book and read it? What would be, and I mean, I have to be very careful with that one because I don't want people to think they're writing for anybody else. But at the same time, sometimes by just shifting that little bit and thinking, okay, so what if someone picked this up? What would I want them to read? And this is a tool I often use with parents, right? Because if you're writing that my kid is just being a little jerk, how would you feel if they read it? Well, if you change it to, I know that this is going on for him, it gets you into a whole different mind space.
Yes. Oh, I love that so much. I'm less charitable than you, Debbie. So for me, in my particular path in life, like I was told not to be mean and be polite and considerate and like filter everything through how is this other person going to receive it. So for me, my practice has been, it is okay to write nasty things about the people I love in my journal.
Well, it is because it's a venting. It is a venting tool.
It is.
Mine, in my example, I'm thinking more about where you're trying to use it to fix a problem or where you're drawing a total blank and don't even know what to write about.
Amen. Right? Well, I think it all works too. Like, all right, full reveal here. Like,
yeah,
that's
nice.
Really kind and generative. Like, I've got to let myself be really nasty and kind of A crab apple. Yeah. Yes. And raw. Absolutely.
And in that case, really remind yourself, this is my journal for me, not for anybody else. So, okay, we are running out of time. So I want to take a moment, shift gears, and talk a little bit about Las Peregrinas. Mm. Okay. I know that you and Sarah and Rebecca have rebranded, and actually over a year ago, I understand. So it's actually been quite a long time.
Yeah.
But do you want to take a minute and just tell us maybe how your service is unique to others?
Yeah. So Las Peregrinas is the coming together of the three of us. And we've each worked separately and had our own successful businesses for 10 years apiece, pretty much. And so the way that we work with our clients, that's really different. We're doing, you know, consulting and advising work. And then we also have a creative department where I'm writing the ad or marketing copy. And then we also have an in-house designer. So we do a lot of website writing and builds and designs, but we also do, you know, email marketing campaigns and print campaigns and newspapers and all sorts of things. The thing that makes us different is that we have a belief among the three of us that each person has work that's uniquely theirs to do in the world. And so we are interested in helping our clients get really clear on what their work is in the world that they have been put on the planet to do, and then design their business or their marketing message around that. So our advising and our creative work all comes up from the seed of who is this person as an individual and what's their gift that we're building the business around. So it's pretty unique because in the marketplace that we operate in, there's a lot of talk of this is how you must build a business, where it's kind of shoehorning individuals into the formula or the system. But we say, no, 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 we actually want to center a business around what the work is for each individual. And we feel like this is an idea that's really rise. It's on the rise. This is the incoming paradigm.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you know, I'm sure people can take what they heard us talking about today and recognize how that all ties in.
Oh, so, yeah.
People can find out more at lasperegrinas.org. If you don't know how to spell that, go to vibrantpowerfulmoms.com. Take a look at any one of the three ladies' shows, and the spelling will be there for you. Stella, thank you so much for agreeing to come back on my show and sharing your beautiful energy with us. I so appreciate you and am so happy that we were able to reconnect.
Me too. Thanks, Debbie.
Oh, you are very welcome. And a big thank you to you, my listeners. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik and her guest, Stella Orange, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.